So this will be a very short class. I don't plan to actually cover material, but rather to tell you what we would have covered if we had more time. And why don't we have more time? So one reason is that I got sick. Another reason is that I misplanned and wasted time in the beginning on various sort of things took longer than they should have. But anyway, that's where we are right now, and I just wanted to say what's left, okay? And nothing is terribly hard, but it needs to be done, and it's better, and rather than doing it incorrectly, I'd rather just sketch it. So to remind you where we were doing Trent-Simons theory. There was an issue that there was a group action, and therefore it was the Lagrangian was degenerate. We talked about Fadeyev-Popov. So we said, if we had an integrand which is invariant under a group action, and here are the orbits, these vertical lines, and we want to integrate it, one way to do it is to find a section. So you find a function into the space, into a space with the same dimension as the dimension of the group. One good choice is the Lie algebra. And the zeros of this function generic or have the right dimensions to intersect every orbit just once. So if we choose the correct such function, it will intersect every orbit just once. And then the Fadeyev-Popov procedure said that the integral of the original function over the whole space is equal to the original of the function times a delta function at f is equal to 0. And you may as well represent this using its Fourier transform. So add another integration variable y and integrate e to the I y f of x times a determinant. And the determinant is, the variation of f in the direction of the orbit. So the orbit is multidimensional, and f is multidimensional. So this is actually a matrix. And its determinant is this factor that you have to insert. And then last time, I started telling you about perturbation theory in the presence of determinants, and that's where I'm going to get more sketchy. So I wanted to look at perturbation theory, so a certain integral where instead of just the usual Gaussian or perturbed Gaussian, is perturbed Gaussian times a determinant, where the determinant is in itself the determinant of some fixed matrix, say we're Taylor expanding everything around some point, maybe zero, okay? So even the determinant will be the determinant of some fixed matrix times a correction. So I'm assuming the correction looks like this. So it depends, basically it's a collection of matrices multiplying the coordinates around zero, okay? And then we started looking at perturbation theory for that, and one way was to do it just using completely standard linear algebra. So, and I started doing it last time, so I said, if you want the determinant of a matrix plus an epsilon perturbation to it, then by a bunch of formulas, it becomes a sum of traces of, more precisely, a sum of traces of wedge powers of that matrix, or Q inverse times the matrix where we're looking at Q plus epsilon P. And then I had the diagrammatic representation for this, and the diagrammatic representation had to do with summing over permutations And then you look at, well, pictures, diagrams that look like this and that are interpreted in more or less the usual way. Okay? So when you do that to our integrand, you get, so basically, you know, one way to view it is to say, let's compute the integral, sorry, the determinant first. If you compute the determinant, so this is the determinant appearing here, it comes out to be a polynomial in epsilon. Well, I mean, epsilon is just this, the measures the degree, and a polynomial in the xi's, and as a polynomial in the xi's, it can be thought of, or it can be written as a sum over pictures like this. So you sum over k, you sum over permutations in sk, and you look at cycles that cycle around with the permutation sigma stuck in here and some signs. But then what you get is, well, for each p, so for each of these matrices that occur here, you get also a factor of x. So the result of the computation of the determinant is a polynomial in x, which then gets integrated against the Gaussian in the usual way. So you get combined perturbation theory, where you get a trivalent graph for the perturbed Gaussian, which interacts with the picture over here, which in fact is also a trivalent graph. Okay? So overall, so basically by just changing the symmetry factors and rewriting pictures like this, in a combinatorially different way, in a geometrically different way, but combinatorially equivalent way, then I find that the end result is a sum over, again, Feynman diagrams. But now my Feynman diagrams have two types of edges. These are purple edges, which really came from Q inverse, and blue edges, which came from lambda ij, so from the Gaussian inverted. And two types of vertices, the vertices that came from the lambda ijk and the vertices that came from the dependence of x on the matrix appearing inside the determinant. Okay? And then there are signs, and the main point about the main difference between this and the usual perturbation theory is some funny sign factor, which is the number of purple loops that occur. Okay, so that's one way to view it, and another way to view it, which is much more somehow powerful eventually, but takes more time to get used to, is to say, well, this looks so much like ordinary Gaussian integration that maybe it is ordinary Gaussian integration. The only difference is a sign. So came Berezin and developed an alternative Gaussian integration theory, or in fact an alternative integration theory, period, which is the same except for signs. Okay, but of course that doesn't define it. So to define it, I would need more effort. But the basic idea is that there will be two types of variables, variables that commute and variables that anti-commute. And variables that commute have the lovely property that x times y is equal to y times x. Variables that don't commute have the lovely property that z times w is equal to negative w times z. Okay? And then there is an integration. So you end up discussing functions in which you are allowing both commutative and non-commutative variables. So
And then there is an integration theory for such functions. Now, such functions are a bit hard to digest for mathematicians because we got drilled when we were taking real analysis. We were drilled very much, very hard, that functions are not formulas. So functions are machines that takes inputs to outputs, and formulas just represent such machines. Okay? But here, functions actually are more or less their formulas. Okay? So basically, if you want to know, you know, if you have a vector space V of non-commutative variables, then the space of functions will be the anti-symmetric power, the exterior algebra of V, or maybe even more precisely the exterior algebra of V dual. Okay? And you should view it as an algebra of functions without interpreting the function, so on which there are operations defined. You can multiply such things, and later you can integrate such things, but without actually viewing these things as being machines that take numbers to numbers. So basically, you know, you can write this Berezin integral either as physicists in blue, and then you will just write what it does to formulas. So the integral d theta of the formula theta, where theta is anti-commuting, is defined to be 1, and the integral of 1 d theta is defined to be 0, and there is some rationale for it. This is the thing that would satisfy the fundamental theorem of calculus in some non-commutative sense. If you were a mathematician, you would think you would have to spend a little more time and say what the space of functions is, and it's some sort of wedge V, exterior algebra of V, and integration will be a map from the exterior algebra of V to the exterior algebra of V. And when you think about it, it actually comes out to be interior multiplication by some element in V dual. Okay? And that turns out to have the same formal properties as integration with respect to one variable. Then you would extend it to many variables, and you would prove theorems about how it behaves relative to changes of variable. And the main thing that will happen is that it will have the same formula for behavior under a change of variable as ordinary integration, except instead of the Jacobian appearing with power 1, it comes out with power minus 1. Okay? And then this leads to a formula for Gaussian integration. And, you know, if you remember Gaussian integration, we had that Gaussian integration was equal to 1 over the determinant. And in the case of odd integration, of Berezin integration, Gaussian integration comes out to be the determinant. So again, this has to be viewed either as, well, no, let me say it differently. This has a completely explicit meaning in terms of exterior algebras, and it's all in the few lines that's above us, but I'm not only sketching. So I'm not writing it in full,
But the basic point is that it's the same as Gaussian integration with
the determinant appearing on the numerator instead of the denominator.
Likewise, well, if you remember, the key point in developing perturbation theory, was to compute the integral, it used to be minus 1/2 lambda ij, lambda ij xi xj, and then we switched to integral of e to the minus 1/2 lambda i x j plus, I think we called the extra variable pi perhaps, or maybe ti it was at the time. So ti xi. Okay, so we added a linear term to the exponent and computed this. And the reason this was so useful was because now if I differentiate with respect to ti, it pulls down an xi to outside the exponential. And if I differentiate multiple times with respect to the ti, I'll get a polynomial. And that's what I wanted to know. I wanted to know how to integrate a polynomial times an exponential. So the same formula works in the odd case. So there is a formula for taking an odd integral. It's actually here with respect to two sets of variables, the thetas and the etas. And then you add a linear thing which is dual to the thetas and another linear thing that's dual to the etas. And you get an answer which is more or less the same, not precisely the same, as the answer, more or less the same, so it's a sign difference, but very close to the answer we got in the even case. So then we can write, yes?
What do you mean by even matrix A?
Even matrix A, so the entries are all even. So in the world of functions that we now manage, we have even functions and odd functions, so it should be entirely even.
So all entries are even.
All entries are even. Yes. So it could be a numerical matrix, just with scalars in the ground field. Or it could be in itself a matrix that has in it entries proportionals to theta and etas, to thetas and etas, but they have to come in pairs. Okay? So, you know, if functions are now elements of an exterior algebra, A should be living only in the even powers. Okay? Okay. So basically, the bottom line is that you can think of the determinant, which now appears in the numerator, so this determinant, as a Gaussian integral in itself. There is a completely ordinary perturbation theory for it, and the only difference is that a few signs enter. Okay? And in fact, these signs are summarized by minus one to the number of loops that come from the fermion, from the odd part of the integration. Okay, but anyway, so for us, the integral we wanted becomes sort of the same integral as before, but what replaced the determinant is again an integral of an exponential, and here is the exponential written out explicitly. But it's an integral with respect to two sets of new variables. These are odd variables, and they're usually called the Fadeyev Popov ghosts. And here are pictures. Here's a picture. Okay? So again, this deserves more detail, but I will, but again, not definitely not now. Anyway, can I erase this? So, in the case of Chern-Simons theory, this is what it comes out to be. So, the thing we integrate is the exponential of, well, I, k over 4 pi, whatever it is, we ended up never really fully discussing it, but times, sorry, and the thing in the exponential is the integral over R3 of A wedge dA plus 2/3 A wedge A wedge A. And this is the ordinary Chern-Simons theory. And then you end up adding terms to it, which come from the Fadeyev-Popov thing. So first of all, you have to choose what the function f would be. And there are several choices, and therefore several different formalisms for the answer. And there's actually one tempting choice, which is so-called axial gauge. So A is really being a three form. A is really dependent, has really three parts. So A is really A0 dx0 plus A1 dx1 plus A2 dx2. And then it turns out that if you declare A0 to be 0, so if you set A0 to be 0, in other words, if you take the function f to be A0, then A is uniquely, then that defines a section. So we think each gauge equivalence class A is uniquely, there is a unique representative in which A0 is equal to 0. This is so-called axial gauge. And the only reason I'm mentioning it is that, is as a warning. In Chern-Simons theory, it completely fails. It gives you wrong predictions. So everything that we do at the end, you know, we do informal things, and they get justified by the formalisms that we do on Wednesday. Okay? And when you start with axial gauge, you run through a certain, it leads you to run through a certain formalism, and you, it gives you wrong answers at the end, okay? And there is some reason for it, which can be explained, okay? But it's just a warning. Not sort of things, not everything you do automatically works, okay? But anyway, the gauge that does work out well is the following. So, you know, we did it already, in fact. We talked about it at some point. So, the quadratic part of our Lagrangian is D. And if you want the section, one way to do it is to choose D star. To set the condition D star of A is equal to zero. We talked about it at some point. It's like taking the L2 minimal representative within each orbit, at least in the abelian case. So in coordinates, this amounts to taking F to be DIAI. Okay? So you take the sum over taking the derivative with respect to the ith variable of the ith component of A. And in fact,
you will notice that it's sort of the indices are in inconsistent place. Okay, here the indices were below, and here they are above, and this is actually the correct way to write it. And the reason is because you need, because this depends on a choice of a metric. You can only speak about all L2 norms once you have a metric. And using the metric, you can trade lower indices to upper indices. So this is sort of a warning. What we wrote is dependent on the metric. Okay? But anyway, So then you add another term, and it is the delta function. So the delta function becomes phi di, no, sorry, di ai. And our integral is no longer just an integral dA, it's also an integral d phi. So phi is the thing that plays the role of y here, okay? And then we have to compute the determinant. So first of all, we have to check how f varies relative to the group, to the infinitesimal generators of the group, so relative to gauge transformations. Now, we talked about gauge transformations a little bit, and gauge transformations transform A to, well, or the variation of A, delta A, was, well, you had to choose a function with values in the Lie algebra that represented the infinitesimal the infinitesimal gauge transformation. Let's call this function C. So where C is some function from R3 into the Lie algebra, and then the variation of delta A was DC plus A bracket C, I believe. Okay? And then how does F vary relative to this? So the thing appearing inside the determinant should be how much f varies relative to this, and this becomes di of, well, dc is really if you want, the ith component of dc is the ith derivative of c. Right, that's it. That's what exterior differentiation of functions is. So this becomes d upper I of C plus di of A upper I bracket C, I believe. Yes. And then let me plug this into here using these ghosts. So I've conveniently chosen things so that one ghost, I've already named it, and then I just have to add the other one. And the result will be C bar di plus bracketing with AI, all of this acting on C. Sorry for the odd notation. Maybe I should have called it add AI. Okay? And the integration is also DC bar and DC, where these are Berezin integrals. And anyway, whatever you do, this is now the final Lagrangian. And then it leads to a perturbation theory. So what does the perturbation theory looks like? So now you apply the Feynman, or maybe the correct word is the Feynman-Berezin machine, or the Feynman-Fadeyev-Popov machine, and you get a perturbation theory. The perturbation theory will have two types of edges, blue edges coming from the even variables and purple edges coming from C bar and C. So blue is this, okay? And it really comes from inverting the A wedge DA part and the phi DI AI part. When you combine these things together, you get a quadratic form. So when you take these two things together, you get a quadratic form acting on a pair A phi, and you can write this quadratic form as a matrix, as the inner product of A phi with a matrix acting on A phi, operator acting on A phi. We actually wrote this at some point and inverted it. Okay, we computed it at some point. So if you remember, the basic point was that L minus squared was the Laplacian. Laplacian we knew how to invert. And then L minus inverse will be, the Laplacian inverse, which we understand, times L minus. And we computed it at some point. Okay. Then there will also be, so this is blue. Then there will also be, for limitations of blackboard, this is purple. And this is actually what the physicists usually use, so wiggle lines. So this is purple, and this will come from inverting the odd quadratic part. The odd quadratic part is C bar, DI, DI, C, but this is exactly the Laplacian. So this will again involve inverting the Laplacian, and we found formulas for this. You maybe remember 1 over 4 pi times convolution with x minus y inverse, something like that, in R3. Then there will be interactions. So there will be a cubic interaction from here. So there will be a vertex that involves three blue lines. And in fact, the blue lines are a combination of A's and phi's, but the vertex projects out the phi part and involves only the A part. So this will be this corresponds to A wedge A wedge A, which is integrated over the manifold, so it will lead to some integration and some wedge products. Then there will be another vertex coming from C bar, A, and C. So it will be a vertex that will involve one blue line and two wiggled lines. And it will correspond to the term coming from C bar DI of AI bracket C. And again, it is integrated over the manifold. So again, it will lead to some integration. But again, you would have to expand to see what it is. And finally, there is, I've written only kind of the vacuum part, but then there's the observable. So finally, there will be the holonomy, and the holonomy will lead to a vertex that looks like this. Okay? So at the end, you get a sum of Feynman diagrams. So at the end, you get Z becomes a sum of Feynman diagrams, but now the Feynman diagrams are slightly different than what I've advertised all along. So they look like
sum of diagrams that look like the following. So, okay, you have a, well, you have parts that look just like in the old times. But in addition, you may have parts that have fermion loops that use the purple propagator and have these trivalent blue to purple vertices. And for each such diagram, you will have an expression corresponding to this diagram. And then there is yet another exercise. And the last exercise is to do the following. So you see, the diagrams come in pairs, or not quite in pairs, but every place you have a fermion loop, you can replace it by an ordinary A loop, or boson loop, or even loop. So this diagram can be paired with the diagram that has over here, which is exactly the same, except instead of a fermion, you have a boson, an A. And then the claim is that these two diagrams taken together give the diagram that we did on Wednesdays. So the thing we managed on Wednesdays, so or said differently, or you know what? Let me say it differently. Let me call this expression associated with a diagram the Friday expression associated with a diagram. So the claim is that the Wednesday expression associated with a diagram is equal to the sum of, so let's call this diagram D, so it's the sum over all blue purple colorings of D of the Friday expression associated with the diagram. Okay, so on Wednesday, to such a diagram, we associated an integral over a configuration space of pullbacks of volume forms. When you pull back volume forms, you have well, you can decompose maybe I'll just keep it as that. So the Wednesday expression, this wedge of pullbacks of volume forms, is equal to the sum of the things you get from here by for each such diagram, looking at all ways of thinking of it, both as a Friday diagram. So each edge gets to choose whether it wants to be purple or blue, provided they are connected under the allowed connection rules for Friday. There is a lot of work to be done here, and the only thing I wanted to do today is to sketch what we're not doing. So I've sketched what we're not doing. I've sketched this part of the work. I think I'll stop here.